Welcome to Suddenly I See, a community engagement project through CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. I'm Christine Bruce.
And I'm Laszlo Polgar. And we want to create a communal space for understanding and talking about gender diversity.
So in today's episode, we're going to take you through the following topics. Who we are and how we got to this point.
Some acknowledgements.
An introduction to the book that brought this project to life.
About the author.
Our goals for the project.
What is gender?
How to contact us.
And our final comments.
Cool. Can't wait. All right, let's talk about who we are. So I'll start with this part, Laszlo, if that's all right with you. I'm hetero, and for a lot of my life, I'd never had to consider this subject with any intensity. It just didn't affect me much, because I fit into that pleasant little box that I now label privilege. But then, I had, in my early adult years, I had a friend, Susan, who came out as a lesbian, and I began questioning the church's teachings. What do I do here? Do I throw my friend out, or do I start seriously questioning the teachings? And it turned out that I needed to seriously question those teachings because I'm not throwing my friend out. I really liked Susan a lot. And then when I first moved to BC, I had these two trans friends who graciously immersed me into their experiences. And, you know, I lived in Toronto for 12 years and there were trans people all around me, but I didn't have a personal experience with any of them. So this really made me think about what I was doing. And then last year, I read Elliot Page's book. And if you've never read Elliot Page's book, or if you don't know who that is, Google Elliot Page, the actor, because their life is really inspiring. And it got me thinking about stuff, again, that is all around me, but it doesn't seem to affect me personally, but it should. And then the last thing I want to say is the biggest change in my life has been that I read this book called Gender, Your Guide by Dr. Lee Erkin. Completely changed all my perceptions of how people live gender. Mm-hmm. All right, Laszlo, over to you.
I am queer. I have known that I am on the queer spectrum with gender and sexuality since I was very, very young. I've had to consider these subjects for longer than I can remember. I grew up never really being forced to be anything but myself, completely accepted to express myself how I needed to, and never be told that I couldn't act some way because of how I was born. I have been like learning and exploring and indulging myself in these subjects since I was very young. Really, like before I even hit double digits, I was like learning about this community of people and like building my perspective on who they are and educating myself. And that's how I ended up figuring out at a very young age that I was on the spectrum myself. I want to help, and I've always have. I've done like tons of telling people what my experience is like and educating them on different things that they've never really thought about before. I just like talking and communicating with people and fostering a community and educating and helping anyone in the ways that I can. Yeah, pretty much who I am.
Lucky us to have you around.
Yeah.
Especially those of us who've never had to consider it.
Right? Yeah, definitely.
There's a lot of grace in you're being willing to talk about it with me.
Definitely. Like, there's tons of people who don't feel comfortable talking about that stuff and being as open as I'm comfortable being open with. And it's scary being the person that people ask questions to and, like, from. But it's kind of rewarding in a way. Kind of like I'm helping somebody see things from another perspective that they've never really, like, thought about before. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. Strengthening the community.
It's great.
It's amazing.
Moving on, we're doing some acknowledgements. I want to acknowledge my mother, who has been a rock for me for ages and has been my truest and closest supporter. The reason that I'm able to have these conversations and be the way that I am and accept myself for who I am and be happy is because of her. She is an absolutely wonderful human being. Next up would be my sibling and my dad, who have also been an incredibly supportive family for me. All of my friends who have kept me like mentally stable through all of the taxing things that I've been through before. All of the trans and queer people that I've met with and collaborated with and had just like incredible conversations with over the course of my life. And then on top of that, the parents of those queer people that like love and support them, because it's a tough job. It's important work and it is life-changing. Like, you have no idea how much your support means to your child. I would have never been the way that I am without my mother's support, and you are wholeheartedly appreciated for what you do. It's hard.
And they don't have a roadmap for what they're doing.
Right? No.
They're fresh territory.
Fresh territory. You have to learn everything yourself, and it's scary, especially like the younger your child, it gets scarier the younger they are. And like, you are fostering a whole human being, and it is like so important to let them know that they can be the way that they need to be. And it is just incredibly inspiring, and I'm so happy that there's so many parents that just let their children be who they want to be, just like my mom let me be who I need to be. It's great. I love it. I'm so happy.
I feel a real sense of relief when I hear you say something like that, that there are people out there who support their kids to be who they are. I think that's wonderful, because that's not always the message I hear in popular
opinion. You always hear that there's like these unsupporting parents and that people are being thrown out of their homes and whatnot. And yes, there is that issue. And it is a very important thing to acknowledge that there are people that have that experience. But like, there's that other side of just this incredibly caring and adoring community of people who are willing to just foster their children into being exactly who they were meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to repeat myself over and over again, expressing how much gratitude I have for these people, because it is a tough job. There's a lot of backlash that comes from it. And it's very important to know that you have people supporting you.
So I'm going to ask a question that I'm certain our listeners are thinking right now, at least some of them are thinking right now, because I've heard it a few times. How do you know when you're young that there's even a question here?
For me, I always was kind of like considered like a tomboy. And that's how the thought kind of started for me, because I was very androgynous when I was younger. Like, I wasn't restricted to just Barbies, and I could play with whatever I wanted to or dress myself however I wanted to. And so that would end up with a lot of people thinking I was either a little girl or a little boy. And then like, sometimes it would bother me, but it never really did. And that realization that like, it doesn't bother me, and that I kind of like being that you can't really tell, that kind of ended up being what started it for me personally. Kind of just like that confusion that people had, where you can't put me into a box right away when you meet me. So it kind of like started with that little like euphoria of like being a confusing person. But then for like, just in general, like, it's not really something that you just like know right off the bat. It's a compounded experiences just can like slowly adding up to that kind of like realization that you aren't cis, quote unquote. There's something there that's not normal, I guess, but it's not, you are normal.
You are normal.
You're just,
you're not the normal that everybody's putting in front of you.
You just have to like change a little bit to make yourself feel more comfortable. That's all.
So do you feel like you're experimenting a lot more than other people are?
I definitely feel like in terms of gender stuff, I probably have done a lot more experimenting in how I express myself. I've had very many different phases when it comes to how I dress myself or what I address myself as, like what my pronouns are and everything. And I've kind of gotten to that point where it's just so, I've never felt extremely discomforted by any of the titles that I've given myself, but I have been by titling myself as like just a girl,
okay,
or just a guy. And so it's just changing around how you think and feel and expressing yourself differently and finding that where you feel comfortable within that broad spectrum of things is, that's really about it.
Okay.
It's not really suddenly I've realized I'm trans. Epiphany. It's just slowly changing things where you start to realize about yourself that, you're probably trans.
Well, Can I just say that it sounds like you have a lot of privilege in your situation?
Definitely.
Because you have so much support and you're allowed that freedom.
I am an incredibly privileged person for the amount of support that I have gotten. I know so many people who have, it is a dream to them to even like start transitioning when they're in their parents' house. And I am so lucky to have the support that I need to transition and be the way that I need to be and be happy with myself, with no amount of like backlash that will actually affect me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like I am extremely lucky for that. And that's why I feel like the parents that are also accepting of their children need to be acknowledged, because it is not an everyday occurrence. And supporting your child can be the toughest thing when it comes to transitioning, but it is also incredibly, incredibly, that relationship that it will foster between you and your kid, like, it will affect an intense amount of your relationship and how you are seen by your children. And it...
How they see themselves, too.
And yes, of course, yeah, how they see themselves. Like, if I wasn't accepted by my family the way that I am, I'm sure I would have, like, an intense amount of resentment towards myself and my family. And so, like, I can totally see how there's those situations where you do have resentment for your family, for those things that ended up happening. I'm so lucky to be able to do what I'm doing.
I feel like I'm lucky, too, as a result of your mom's work, your parents' work, your siblings' work, because you're confident in who you are, and I'm attracted to your confidence. And the more we talk, the more I think, wow, I don't even feel uncomfortable checking out the gender expression every time. There's a different expression every time we meet, and I'm checking it out, and I don't feel like I'm staring or being awkward. I feel like I'm learning more about another person who really likes themselves.
Yeah.
And that would never have happened if you hadn't had that support. So I think this is a really key element of the genderqueer community, is that they need support.
Support is like one of the most important things. Yeah. You can't make any kind of motions without that support.
Yeah.
And that foundation that you're building. It falls apart without the foundation. And you can't make a building without the support beams.
That's right.
So incredibly grateful for my parents, and incredibly grateful for all the other parents of queer children out there. It's very inspiring and amazing work that people are doing.
Coolio. All right. My acknowledgements, which are much less interesting than yours, but no less important. So I want to start by saying that by trade, I'm a communicator. So a writer, a broadcaster, an educator. And I read things that the average person dismisses. Nobody else reads the acknowledgements chapter or the preface. I read all that stuff because it gives me an insight into the person. And Lee's acknowledgements were especially meaningful. They suggested that Lee take self-care very seriously to ensure that their work and their community benefit. And I love that about this book, that there's, again, a foundation, as you said. So in that light, I want to thank my home team, Mary and Mary Jean, both back in Ontario, my friends Pam, Bethany, and I want to acknowledge my dog, Bart, who's great therapy for me when a day's going off the cliff. So thank you all for taking care of me, yourselves, and our community. You are all knocking it out of the ballpark, and I'm really grateful for your friendship and your support. And I also want to acknowledge Glenn Ingram, our CICK station manager, because he saw the value of this project and he gave it his support. And that, to me, is really significant. And I don't want any of these people or my dog to feel like I don't appreciate their support.
Yeah, could not have done it without them.
Never. And lastly, I'd like to honor all those people throughout my life who've demonstrated courage in the face of what Lee calls gender unfriendliness, and who've given me some healthy roadmaps to navigate a world where differences make us all more vibrant and marvelous. In June 2024, an updated edition of the book, Gender Your Guide, was published. The book is by Dr. Lee Ayrton, A-I-R-T-O-N. And it came highly recommended to me, so I picked up a copy and I was totally gobsmacked. I read some parts twice, I bought another copy when friends wanted to borrow it, and I'm reading that copy again. And now I want to share the contents of this exceptional book with everybody. So in the preface, Dr. Ayrton talks about some of the challenges faced by genderqueer people when they need to use a public washroom. And that just blew me away, because I've never had a bad experience in a bathroom. And one of my friends the other day was telling me that they'd been beaten up in bathrooms before. I'm like, what? Really? I can't believe you're telling me this. So Dr. Ayrton describes even the smallest challenges as an energy-intensive process. And I thought, what planet am I living on? Now, one of our early conversations, Laszlo, you told me a story about bathrooms that I wonder if you'd be willing to share with us. I don't want to be intrusive about this information, but...
Yeah, no, totally. I've had many experiences when it comes to like thinking about bathrooms. I mean, as I said, I've been growing up queer for a very long time and have had a lot of anxiety around bathrooms. And one of the many, many challenges when it came to going to school was with bathrooms, especially when I had gotten into the high school in town. It only had one gender non-conforming bathroom when I was there. And it was more of a, like a wash closet. It was like right next to the library, like front door, and was in one of the most populated halls. And if the bell rung, you weren't getting into the bathroom. It was a struggle. It was very often it was being used or I couldn't get in because it was busy in the hall. And then when you are using it, it's just this tiny little wash closet and the toilet's right next to the door. So you don't really feel like there's much privacy there. Especially if you're an anxious person, it's very anxiety inducing to just go to the bathroom. And as an anxious person, I had a lot of issues with it. And so I ended up going to one of my teachers, Perry Rath, the art teacher, actually.
A little shout out to Perry.
Shout out to Perry. And I asked him if he could help me get in touch with the school board or something to reach out and say that we needed more and that the amount of students that have started to show that they are on that gender spectrum somehow, or would at the very least feel more comfortable with a non-conforming bathroom. It's there's more students, right? It's not just a couple students anymore. And I was hoping that maybe just like one of the bathrooms would be revamped into a gender neutral one. I was like, you don't even have to really do anything. You just have to do a sign change. And the next year, they had done a change, but the most of the change was just making sure that the already existing non-conforming bathroom had a sign that said it was non-conforming. And I was like, oh, well, that's all they're going to do?
So we're still in the same space?
So it was still the same space and everything, but I was like, okay, well, maybe this is just in the meantime. Because one of the things that I had also mentioned was not a lot of people even know that this bathroom exists as an option. It's kind of that, like, you hear about it and you're told about it and you hear that you can go to this bathroom and that you're allowed to and you get let into the bathroom. And I was like, oh, well, I guess what can you do? You can't really just ask for everything and then it appears the next year, right? But what's cool is that my sibling, who's still in high school, ended up mentioning to me that they actually did end up revamping a couple of the bathrooms in the school to be fully non-conforming. And it is the ones right next to the lobby of the school. So the most popular bathrooms, I'd say, that students are using. And it is completely non-conforming now and can be used as like a washroom for any gender, or if someone is uncomfortable, since it's right across from the gym, they can go into that one instead of using one of the change rooms in the gym. Because I know that's something I did with the non-conforming one, but it was quite a trip having to go all the way to the bathroom. Yeah. And it's just so cool to me, like, that I probably wasn't the first person to bring it up with the school board, but I was one of the people to bring it up, and I was added into that. I was another person to say, we need this, and a change actually happened, and it was just that, I got like a warm feeling, like that was so rewarding for me.
And well, you've been heard.
Yeah, I was heard, and something changed, and it was something that I had explicitly gone and asked for, and it was just super cool. But yeah, not taking all the credit for the bathrooms being changed, but definitely was like part of asking for some help with that aspect. Yeah, it's like super cool.
It's a great story. It's a great story. Awesome. I feel like we should be all applauding this because it's right? So wonderful. Like, what a great community to have.
And it's amazing. And the fact that the school board and the school itself like put the money and the funds into supporting their students like that, even though it was a small population of students that I was talking about, they still cared. And that's what's really important, is they care about that small population and you're not just being overlooked because there's not that many of you. And that's just so heartwarming to me that there's like, yeah, we're not being overlooked. And it's just, it's so nice.
One comment that I want to make here is it's a small community that you know of, right? I think there's probably several people out there that we don't know of, mm-hmm. and they haven't come out, or they don't want to come out, or they just prefer to be quiet about the whole thing, which is perfectly acceptable. Yeah. But there's like, let's not assume it's just one or two people. Never assume that, because I think there's probably a lot of people out there. Yeah. Why do we think there's just two sexes? You know, right. Where did we get that idea?
There's so many people on this planet. There's got to be more. There's got to be some more gray area.
So I love that they heard and they responded to it. This is just a moment for celebration.
It's so uplifting. Yeah.
So just great.
So inspiring.
So there's something else. When I hear these anecdotes, I want to be that person whose face shows welcome, encouragement, appreciation, that maybe the washroom experience isn't a gender-friendly situation, but I am. So whenever now I go into a public space, I literally start looking to see if there are gender-neutral bathrooms. There hardly ever are, because we're just not there yet in our society. But I can be the person that says, why are these both gendered? I don't understand. Do they need to be gendered at all? You know, we're in a small space. We don't have a lot of people visiting the bathroom. It's not like the high school where you might have a group of 10 people mm-hmm. all need to be in there at the same time. Do they really need to be gendered? Like, I'm the person now who's looking at this, thanks to hearing these anecdotes.
Yeah.
I want to move us forward.
That's super important.
Yeah.
Like being that person as well is just like super having that kind of allyship and seeing other people who aren't directly like affected by these things, but they see them. It creates that warm, fuzzy feeling like, oh, these struggles that I'm facing aren't just invisible.
Yep.
And nobody's noticing them. And so I don't really want to talk about them. Like, I'm being bothered by bringing it up. But then I see people who aren't affected by them bringing it up, and I'm like, oh, this is a conversation that I can actually be involved in. Like, I have something to say about this one.
Yes. Yeah.
And just being that person that can like open the door to having people like me who are a little bit too nervous to even like bring it up, it's great. It's important. It's being that kind of member in the community is like, it is like a pillar. I would say that's a pillar.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm probably going to say this 100 times over the course of this project, but I have a lot of privilege. When I have to go, I just go. I want that experience for everybody. Why should you be anxious about having to go to the bathroom? Like, that seems to me a really dumb thing to have to be anxious about. So I should be one of those people that steps in and says, hey, let's make sure that we all get to just, I gotta go. We should all have that kind of privilege. It should be just a no-brainer.
It shouldn't cause any anxiety.
No! Just go to the bathroom. You gotta go to the bathroom. You gotta go. As I was reading the book, one of Dr. Ayrton's comments was that lots of people are trying not to offend genderqueer people.
Yeah.
So they look away, or they, you know, you don't want to do something embarrassing because you just don't know what to do. And I don't want to be that person anymore. That was the moment where I knew I needed to share this book with my radio community, and I needed to know what to do in these situations. Because, in my opinion, knowledge is power, and it's compassion, and it's community. And I want to read a section out of the book just so that you can understand, you know, how it affects when you're reading the book. We're not going to read the whole book. We're certainly not even going to touch on all the topics in the book.
Definitely.
We'll touch on just the Smithers-specific topics that we think people will really get something out of. But I want to read some of this because it affected me deeply. So here we go. In between being offended and being assaulted, which is an experience I've never had, holy, there's a whole range of reasons why genderqueer people need others to get into the work of changing how gender works for and alongside us. Trans people can avoid the bathroom sometimes, but we can't avoid other people and the language we use to communicate with each other. For many trans people, everyday communication and interactions are situations where our well-being and mental health are actively, gradually either beefed up or run down, often by people around us who may not have any idea how their words or actions affect our capacity to participate in the world. I'm not talking about those people who are set on doing us harm or denying our existence, but people who just haven't had to think about how gender rigidly structures our lives, spaces, and interactions. Like, that to me is an incredibly mind-blowing situation, because none of that matters to me. I think I've got a lot of stress in my life. I got nothing compared to what's going on in some people's lives. And it's just little things like, I got to go to the bathroom. Holy smokes. Like, I don't know how you get through a day with...
Yeah, like planning ahead, like making sure like, oh, I'm going to be outside for this many hours, so I have to make sure I go to the bathroom before I leave because I'm not going to be comfortable going to a bathroom there, is definitely one of the thoughts that I've had very often when it comes to going out to things. And then like even just stuff like a minor stomach ache or stomach issues or I'm feeling a little bit under the weather, I'm like, all right, well, I'll just stay home instead of going to these like friend events or things like that because I'm just nervous about having to go to the bathroom later. Yeah. And it's definitely something that's on a lot of different people's minds whenever they go out in public.
Wow. I think that's very sad that people have to worry about that kind of thing, that they have to be anxious about it. And Dr. Ayrton goes on to relate that an accidental misgendering doesn't offend them. I really like this. They say there's no surge of righteous indignation, which is reassuring for me because I do misgender sometimes and I do worry that I've just lost a friend or, you know, offended somebody badly. But Dr. Ayrton says instead it's deflating like a balloon out of air. It's exhausting to not be seen for who you are. And I think, yeah, that would be hurtful. That upsets me almost as much as the whole misgendering thing. That I haven't offended them, but I have deflated them. I've taken energy out of their day. And, you know, we gender everything all day long, unconsciously. We'll talk about that in another chapter of the book. I love learning how we gender all day long. And I'm not thinking about it, but other people are thinking about it, and they're affected by what I'm doing and saying. And genderqueer people don't fit into categories elegantly, if at all. And they get left out and they're not acknowledged. And if they are, there's an unnecessary emotion attached. And I had to think about how that would feel. So Dr. Ayrton says something else that really affected me. Here we go. Every ounce of transgender knowledge, skill, and energy will not make everyday life more welcoming for transgender people if we're the only ones making an effort. It takes too great a toll on transgender people to do all the correcting, explaining, and advocating required to make gender less exhausting all around. So this is where I come in, having read the book. I'm not genderqueer. Apart from being a dedicated tomboy, I'm exactly what you'd expect from my F marker on my birth certificate. But that doesn't mean that I'm excused from the gender conversation. And suddenly, I see that I'm not excused from the conversation, that I need to have conversations with people on a regular basis and say, have we thought about this? What can we do to make this easier for people? Because this is my community.
Yeah, it's a conscious effort, and one that a lot of people don't think that they have to like necessarily make, or just like thinking about the fact that they don't make, they're like, oh, well, I don't hate them, so that's enough. And I can understand where that kind of like, you might not have the energy to have that conversation every day, but still, when you have the conversation, are you ready for it? Are you educated enough that you can defend a trans person without one being in the room when something is said that's anti-trans or just hateful in general? Do you have the necessary info and preparation to combat that? Because I probably do, having the experience of a trans person, but most cis people who don't make a conscious effort to put themselves into that conversation constantly, just when it happens, they realize that they're not as readily equipped for it. The moment they'll say something, which I appreciate, like saying something at the very least, but they'll say something and then quickly it turns into a fight or something that's not worth the energy, or you get combated somehow in a way that you're not sure how to defend against, and then your whole argument falls apart. And having that conversation over and over and over again, and educating yourself constantly and making sure that you're on top of yourself and consciously making that decision that you are supporting these people, is so important in being an ally.
Yeah.
It is incredibly important and incredibly helpful. And I appreciate every single person who makes that decision and puts in that effort, because it is a lot of hard work. I will acknowledge that.
Yeah. So, just like Dr. Ayrton, I want to live in a world where people can happily live gender in diverse ways rather than what Ayrton calls a forcible conformity in a service of rigid two-category system. Like, I've never thought about it that way, but if you look at it, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I just happen to fit into it, so I don't see how uncomfortable that is for some. It's like the round peg in the square hole. They don't fit. Mm-hmm. Well, why should they have to fit? I think it's the system that's the problem, not the person.
I don't think it's the shaped block. I think you're putting it in the wrong hole.
So we go back to my friend Sue, who was a lesbian who didn't fit. And I didn't throw my friend out. I started questioning the institutional system. So that's where I want to be. I want to be that person that questions things. And I want to understand and recognize the gender possibilities that have been around since forever. And I don't want to deny that they exist. They do exist, whether I want to deny it or not. They exist. That's a fact. And what if we all assist with gender work with fewer expectations and less harm? So this is where the book comes in. This second edition of Gender Your Guide is a manual to help you understand all the ways that people do gender. It discusses how to implement gender-friendly language and practices. It explains why gender-friendliness benefits everyone, not just people who are genderqueer. Everyone, that includes me. It benefits me. And there's lots of information on how to participate in creating a more gender-friendly community. Now, if all this feels overwhelming, there are lots of anecdotes in the book, and Laszlo and I have had so many conversations where we both have anecdotes to share that will demonstrate what we're talking about. And that's why we called it Suddenly I See. Mm-hmm. You listen to these anecdotes and suddenly you're like, oh yeah, I've never thought about that before.
It's definitely like one of those things where the more you talk about it, the more you kind of understand why, oh, I hadn't thought of that. And then that's what I mean by, like, it's so important to have those conversations every day, because then you will become more equipped and knowledgeable about these situations that you might have never considered before.
Yeah.
The conversation is so worthy.
It's so much fun.
Really? It is. Feels like a little gossip session.
It does. I can't tell you how much I look forward to these conversations with you, Laszlo. I'm really learning a lot and really enjoying myself in them. I feel like I've expanded. I've grown a couple of inches. You know, I'm a better person for it. Just for having known you and having these conversations. It's so great.
Well, I'm honored to be that person for you.
I want to add that Laszlo and I are going to do our best to discuss Smithers-specific anecdotes and situations, because we really want to meet our community's particular needs. We're going to rely heavily on Laszlo's experiences, and that's why I'm doing a lot of the talking in this first episode, because I can speak to the why and the how of this project, but Laszlo needs to speak much more elegantly about the what, if they're willing to, right? Yes, I don't definitely want Laszlo to ever feel like they have to or that they're put on the spot. I don't want Laszlo to ever feel exposed in any way. So this is all up to Laszlo, what they want to share. But they have so many great anecdotes to share, and it's really great to learn.
Very open to sharing them.
Thank you for being gracious with us. And then we want to turn to the book for a roadmap on what that means in our community and how we can turn it into a positive, making us all stronger and happier. So I'm telling you about this book. I'm not telling you to go and buy it, although I highly recommend you do get your own copy. But the Smithers Library has a copy of the book because I went over and recommended it. And you can also order it through an interlibrary loan. So there are copies out there available. I've encouraged Meals Office Supplies to keep it on order, and they assure me that they can't get it in fast enough. So that means people are reading this book, which is really terrific. You can go to leeairton.com, which is leeairton.com. You can order it. You can find out more. There's also lots of other resources on this website, and I highly recommend you go there. Meanwhile, I've gotten permission from Dr. Ayrton to follow the layout of the book for this CICK project, and there are three parts to the book: what to know, what to say, and what to do. And within these parts, we're going to follow the chapters for our episodes and discuss recommendations made in the book for building your own roadmap on what it means to live in a genderqueer town like Smithers and to navigate that elegantly. Now, as I've said a couple of times here, it's going to be fun, but it's going to be a lot of hard work. And we'll bring guests in to discuss specific topics and some of the comments we're getting from you. And together, I want us all to try and make Smithers more gender friendly.
Yeah, that's my one wish. I would love to foster like a very more like communal space when it comes to gender stuff. And I want to feel more safe going out the door, maybe. Because I don't feel ever like I'm in a hostile environment when I come into town, and I wouldn't say that I am ever outright attacked or anything, but there's often times where I wonder if I am supported, and having a show like this can tell a lot of people that they are, and there are many, many people who are willing to put down any kind of thing about themselves to explore and identify and create something that could be very beautiful, like a beautiful community, and foster just some wonderful relationships mm-hmm. and personalities, and just see what comes out of it.
Yeah.
Because that would just be wonderful. Like, if we can create that community and make it just as good as it can possibly be, that would be so great for me.
I just love the energy in this room. I just love it so much.
It's so exciting.
Join us.
One of us.
I mean, if there's a listener-supported radio station, it means that people can get
daily, every day, a different way of looking at the world, not just what the corporate media want you to see, but a different picture, different understanding, but a different picture, a different understanding. Not only can you hear it, but you can participate in it. You can add your own thoughts, you know, and you can learn something and so on. Well, that's the way, people become human, you know. That's the way you become human participants in a social and political system.
So I keep mentioning Dr. Lee Ayrton. They're an assistant professor of gender and sexuality studies in education at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. My first awareness of Dr. Ayrton was a few years ago when my daughter lived next door to Lee and their partner, and they became fast friends. So I was sort of aware of Lee, but not really. They were such good friends, in fact, that my twin granddaughters now call Lee and their partner Wizzy, which is a gender non-specific title, somewhere on the aunt and uncle spectrum. Isn't that lovely? And I'm telling you this because I'm having trouble calling them Dr. Ayrton, as you can imagine. They've sort of been on the periphery of my life for quite a while, and I've never called them Dr. Ayrton until I read this book. And then my level of respect for them went way up. And of course, it's professional for me on a show to say Dr. Ayrton, but I'm having trouble with it. So if you'll excuse me, I'm going to start calling them Lee, and that's who I mean, Dr. Ayrton. You can find out more about Lee, as I said, at leeayrton.com. Meanwhile, since our listeners are a key ingredient in this conversation, I'm going to call you, audience, by the affectionate term Wizzy whenever I'm looking for your input, because I want you to feel like you're right here in the room with us, and we're really glad you're with us here.
Okay, I kind of wanted to talk about our goals with this show and what we were looking to achieve with it. First of all, I want to achieve some safety and acceptance for myself and the other queer people in Smithers specifically. I know it can feel ostracizing sometimes, and often like there's not as much support as there is, but it's there, and people do care, and I am one of those people, and so I want to speak up as one of those people who very, very much care to say that there is somebody out there who sees you as very important and worthy of this conversation. I also want to address parts of like intersectionality and how gender can affect that and how gender expression can affect that. I want to foster in a community that rises to the occasion and kind of like sees that there's a problem and deals with it as it comes and isn't afraid to have the hard topics to discuss. I want to acknowledge, appreciate queer people and those who support us, and again, kind of have that acceptance within here and the community outside. I want to help break down and understand what's going on and kind of create a space for the topics and the discussion that we're having. Like, what is going on? There's a lot of people who don't even have their foot in the door for understanding these things. And so my personal goal for here is to just open the door for you, give you the chance to continue learning for yourself what you want to do and how you want to take this information.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't can't see me on the radio, but I'm nodding my head energetically because I agree with all of those goals. And I have to say that community building is a big goal for me, but I guess the one big goal I have is to be as humble as I can about this. I recognize that I have a lot of privilege. And for years, I've recognized that it would be a mistake for me to take advantage of that on my own behalf. But I see something like this and I think, but if I can take advantage of my privilege on behalf of someone who doesn't have privilege, hell yeah. That's my goal, is to be able to step in there and say, hey, I've got privilege and I'm going to say this thing that maybe you're too anxious about saying, or maybe you feel like you need a little bit of support, or right there, you know, I can be that person. So just for us to be really good communicators and be there for each other.
Yes, exactly. I'm like, thank you for, you've given me the chance to have this conversation on air and have people hear about it, because this is definitely a conversation I've had in private before, but I've never had that kind of like space and a podium, I guess, that I can put myself on. You've given me the soapbox.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate it. Like, I would have never had that opportunity without you.
It's a great relationship, you know?
Yeah.
And I would have missed it if I hadn't said to you one day, do you mind my asking what your pronouns are?
Yeah.
Remember, that's how this all started?
No, it all started just like, you just saw something that was like a little bit different. And usually that scares some people, but you were very like open and probably one of the first people that I've had in like a workspace scenario come up to me and ask that. And it was very weird, but not in like a judgmental way, but more of a like, oh, I'm being recognized. I'm not just having somebody assume and put me in a box like how it usually is. It kind of broke that autopilot that I get into.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, it was very refreshing, I guess, to kind of hear somebody like acknowledge me like that. I want to make you comfortable when we're talking together.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was, I appreciated it.
I went home feeling really good about this situation, because I felt like, okay, I haven't made a mistake. I've made a friend and I've learned something.
Yeah.
And those are three great things to come away with from any interaction.
Right? Like sometimes it goes wrong, and sometimes people are feeling a little bit raw at the time and they'll lash out or they'll be offended by your questioning, and it is never personal.
Yeah.
It's never personal. It is not your fault. It is just something that they're dealing with. And I have had those moments in my own experience where I have lashed out at people who have misgendered me or have been asking me the questions, but was not a very good time in my mindset, and like very much regret those moments. And it is more often than not a positive experience. So I don't think people should be afraid of asking those questions, even though it is a little bit harder of a question to ask.
Well, because you don't expect it, right?
You don't expect it, yeah. It's very like, what? I can't believe I'm being asked this.
Well, I would think sometimes people are just trying to be stealth. They're trying to keep it hidden, and they don't want anybody to notice, right?
It's like, oh no, they figured me out. And,
yeah.
And it's like very panic-inducing, and like, if you say the honest truth, you'll get judged or something. But there's those moments. But more often than not, it should be something that's like very positive. And opens up the door for a more like connected relationship, and even if it's a short one, even if you're never gonna meet again, it's just kind of like nice to have that.
It's great.
Yeah,
so great. All right, Laszlo, let's talk about what gender is.
Oof. Okay, I guess we can start with the basics. Is it's a societal construct. It is not a stagnant and precise thing that's like, this is truth. It is built over a millennia of different philosophies and cultures and expressions, and it changes across the board. There is a spectrum for every different like group of people, and it is just, it's insane. It's too hard to bottle into just two things. Male and female just doesn't make sense in my head. It's like a personal identifier too, I'd say, as much as like people are say they're like, oh, you can't just decide what this gender is. But then I'm like, well, why can't you? Because you can decide what you would consider female, and you can decide what you consider male. And then that changes across generations.
Yes.
And then you have like an older man who's like, oh, well, a man is someone who takes care of the family and he goes and does the work.
Right.
And then a woman is the one who's at home. And all of that is just a construct that society has put together that eventually over the generations and over time it has changed. And so now it means a completely different thing. And that's like the old way of thinking about gender.
Yeah. Women can also be a breadwinner.
Right.
Although we don't pay her as well still.
And so I think about it. I'm like, well, we say that it's just this like stagnant thing and it's man and woman, but then even man and woman is so fluid and changes so common and drastically, and it's different in every single country and between every single age that it's not even a static one or two thing. I would consider it a tool for expression, and in that way that it's a tool for expression, everybody's different. Because like the way that I would say, oh, that's very like feminine and womanly, you could, another person could come in and say, oh, well, no, that's masculine and very male because of this and this and this. And I'm like, okay, well, then our perceptions of these genders are just different. And these titles are just different in our brains, because that's the philosophy of it. It changes with every person. And
well, isn't that like languages where the gender, like in the French, some things are feminine or some are masculine. Yeah. When I was learning French, I thought, how would you decide that one is one and the other is another thing? They all seem sort of neutral to me.
There's not even like
it's very arbitrary.
There's not a clear answer to what is gender, because it's all over the place.
Yeah.
There's no static decision that this is the way it has to be, because even with cis people, there's not even just like it has to be that way. It's, you know, there's feminine men and there's masculine men, and then what do we consider feminine and masculine in the first place? And it's confusing. It is very, very confusing.
It is.
Even for me, who's been thinking about it for like a decade, I can't say that it's a very easy thing to wrap your head around. But yeah, that would be like what I would say what gender is.
Okay.
Quote unquote.
I want to finish this segment with a little story about an advert that I saw once, and it affected me deeply. Probably 20 years ago, I saw this on TV. So there's a dog in the hallway, and it's obviously waiting in anticipation for something, probably a walk. You figure that out. And then he goes to the bathroom, and you don't really see the person. You see parts of the person. But they're in the shower. They're shaving their legs, and they're getting ready to go out somewhere fancy. You can tell it's a fancy moment for this person. There's anticipation in the person's body language, too. And then they're getting dressed, and they're putting on high heels, and there's makeup, and they're putting on some trouble for this thing, right? Wherever they're going. And they keep going back to the dog, and the dog's, you know, watching that, okay, they're getting closer to whatever we're heading for. And then you see the back of the person in high heels, very fancy dress, and the dog is excited. They're heading for the walk, and they grab the leash, and then they open the door, and you suddenly see the person in profile. And it's a man wearing a very feminine outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time that the advert interacts with you on a personal level. The words come up. Dogs don't care.
I know.
And then it's for a shelter. Adopt a dog. You know, dogs don't care. And that affected me so deeply, because I thought, why do we care?
Why do we care?
What difference does it make?
I have so many pets, and I like have had a few pets during like transitioning and whatnot. And even when I started hormone therapy, absolutely nothing changed about them. They knew it was still me.
Yeah.
And so I just think it's so funny that like, oh, it really is just a social thing. It really is just like it's a non-problem problem. It's a crazy that it's even a discussion that we have to make, but if it must be, then we'll make it.
Let's have that conversation. Yeah. There are interest groups in Smithers who will both strongly agree with this and strongly disagree with the opinions expressed, both in Lee's book, Gender Your Guide, and expressed by us here at Suddenly I See. Now, expressing opinions is what democracy is all about, and one of the things I really love about Smithers, and we encourage you to contact us. Send us your thoughts, your questions, your comments, because while I'm no expert on this topic, and I am certainly not bulletproof, I do have an ace up my sleeve. Lee Ayrton and I are negotiating on a final episode to Suddenly I See, where they'll come to the show and answer your questions. We haven't worked out all the details, but for now, do send us your comments and questions, because I'd love to know how Lee's book and our conversations are affecting you.
Yeah, we're still in the stage of setting everything up, but you can contact us by giving us a call at the CICK station. It's 250-847-8769. And I'm going to repeat it, 250-847-8769. 8769, and you can leave a message there, or you can email us at cick.suddenlyic@gmail.com, And we'll have two social media outlets. We're making a Facebook account and a Instagram, which we will be listing in future episodes.
To end this episode, I want to add an accountability clause, which I think I'm going to read at the beginning of every episode from now on, since the gender topic can polarize audiences and draw out harsh reactions. In this and coming episodes of Suddenly I See, we are holding ourselves and everyone who's listening accountable for our reactions in this shared space. I'm not talking about being polite or about being a nice person. When I read Lee's books, I realize how dangerous being genderqueer can be. As we said earlier, we want to hear from everyone. It's important that we learn together. But if you post hurtful messages on our social media channels, if you leave us a nasty phone message at the station or on email, if you see one of us on the street and say something threatening or harassing, just know it's illegal what you're doing. We won't read those comments on the air. Do some navel gazing instead, because you know what? I believe you can do better. Don't give in to that temptation. To the women, non-binary folks, genderqueers who have felt this, keep being you. And to all of our listeners, acknowledge your friends and supporters. Take care of yourself and your friends. Watch your body language. Ask those awkward questions like, can I ask what your pronouns are? And insert yourself if something feels off, even on behalf of a stranger. And if you personally feel unsafe, ask for help when you want support. One of my friends recently called me an angel, and I corrected them by saying I was going to steal the moniker Raging Granny. And together my friend and I settled on the term Raging Angel. I encourage you to be a Raging Angel and make Smithers a safe, fun, joyful place to live.
Yeah.
I love this town so much.
Yeah. It's such a good community.
Wouldn't it be great if it was full of Raging Angels?
Right. Let's all be Raging Angels together.
So, in 2 weeks, we're going to get into the meat of the gender conversation. Chapter 1 of Gender Your Guide was my favorite chapter in the book, and we're going to discuss the following topics. Whether gender is a factor or a process, or maybe a little of both. What does intersex mean? How does biology and socialization enter into it? And then we're going to discuss some common terms. Now, when I read the book and considered my role, I had to grapple with not entirely understanding what all these terms meant. So I think, Wizzy, that you'll be glad of this part in the conversation. And then we're going to go into thinking about how gender works in everyday life and how gender is everywhere, how gender requires both our visual participation and our verbal participation. And to close out the next episode, we're going to discuss explicit questioning and calling out and how that affects the genderqueer community. See you in 2 weeks, Wizzy. Keep well. Yeah.